October 16th, 2012, Vrindavan, Nectar Devotion, Chapter 4. Okay. So the one from Nectar Devotion, Chapter 3, should be pretty easy since we just discussed that today. So the Uttama Adhikari, strong in knowledge and strong in faith. And the Majjhima Adhikari? Strong in faith and not as so strong in knowledge. Not weak in knowledge, but not so strong. And the Kanista? Weak in faith and weak in knowledge. Okay. What about from the Nectar of Instruction, Text 5? Who is the Kanista? Yes?
Anyone who chants Hare Krishna.
Okay. And who is the Majjhima?
Who's taken
Diksha? No, not first.
He's fully engaged by this.
And is engaged in? Specifically?
I don't know.
What service?
Preaching.
No.
No.
Devotional service? What? Huh? No.
Deity.
Yeah, what? What?
Deity
worship. Deity worship can only be done by someone who has diksha, who has what we call second initiation. Diksha has five parts: nam, tapa, tilak, mantra means Gayatri mantra, and archa. So their diksha definitely refers to Gayatri diksha. And definition of the uttama? Undeviating devotional service and?
Doesn't criticize him.
Not only doesn't criticize.
He's accepted as spiritual master.
Text, just the text.
He says everybody relation him.
Oh no, that's the purport. Yes. Yes. Translate.
No criticizing.
Not just no criticizing, but free from the. It's related to criticism. Not just that they don't criticize. Free from the. Has to do with criticizing. What's your okay, you are Radha Padmini. Yes.
One who should be associated with.
Yeah. It has to do with criticize. Free from the something to criticize. Propensity to criticize. That's different from criticizing, isn't it? Is there a difference from not criticizing and not having the propensity to criticize?
You can abstain, like, forcibly from criticizing.
Yeah. Is there a difference from not stealing and free from the propensity to steal? There's a little difference, isn't there? Okay. So free from the propensity to criticize others. Doesn't have a tendency to criticize others. Okay. What's interesting about that is that the first two are somewhat external. The first two have to do more with behavior, and the last one has to do more with qualities. Isn't it interesting that Rupa Goswami, for that one, out of all the qualities of a devotee, he could have picked any of the 26 qualities of a devotee. He picks that one, free from the propensity to criticize. Okay, is that the same as the Majjhima Uttama and Kanista that we studied today? No, definitely not. Could you have firm faith and firm knowledge and still have a propensity to criticize others? For sure. It's not describing the same thing. Okay, what about what's in the purport to Nectar of Instruction, Text 5, the purport to Ishopanishad, Mantra 7, which is pulled from Bhagavatam, Canto 11. What is the Kanista?
Mr. Worship in deity.
Yes, he's worshipping the deity, but... doesn't know how to treat other devotees and other living entities. So the Kanista is worshipping the deity. Interesting, because it was the Majjhima in text 5 who's worshipping the deity, but the Kanista is worshipping the deity.
But doesn't say only in the temple. Is this the Krishna only in the
deity? He thinks that Krishna is only in the deity. He doesn't know how to treat other living entities. And then the Majjhima?
You can discriminate between the devotees and
all. Okay, what are the four categories?
Lord.
God.
His devotees.
Devotees.
Innocent.
And?
Atheist.
What does he do with God?
Worships.
No.
Loves.
The Sanskrit is prema. Sanskrit is prema. It's prema. It says prema. He loves God, and what does he do with the devotees?
Friendship.
Did you say Maitra?
This is the Kanishta.
No, this is the Majjhima from 11th canto. Mercy to the innocent and to the demons?
Avoids.
And the Uttam? He sees everyone as equals, and he sees everyone as a devotee, except himself. He says, I'm fallen, and everyone's a devotee. So is that describing the same Uttam? No. So it's very confusing because it has the same words, and especially if you don't know Sanskrit, you may think, you know, these are some sort of special words, but they're not. They're just beginning, intermediate, and advanced is what these words are. So who's a beginner? Well, there's different ways of thinking about a beginner. Who's intermediate? There's different ways of thinking about who's intermediate. Who's advanced? There's different ways of thinking about who's advanced.
That's some, like, glimpses of the higher ones in general.
Yeah, I've been bringing that up all along. That... These different stages are not isolated boxes. Just like even on a material level, sometimes a 4-year-old child can act very grown up, and sometimes a 40-year-old man can act like a child. So in spiritual life also, that a beginner can sometimes get a glimpse of a higher stage, and somebody on a higher stage can have some areas in which they're not so advanced. This is nicely explained in Madhurya Kadambini in a very simplistic way, that to be steady, you have to be steady in body, mind, and words, and good qualities. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura says that generally one becomes first steady in body, then in body, mind, and words. First body, then words, then mind. But he says some people become steady first in mind, and then in body, and then in speech, or in whatever order. It doesn't always follow that order. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura also says a person may be steady in good qualities, but not steady in bhakti, and that's not considered actual steadiness. And he says, but you may also become steady in bhakti, but not steady in good qualities. And that's considered actual steadiness. And the steadiness and good qualities will come. In other words, each one of us is going to advance in a slightly different way. And we may become advanced in one way. Somebody may be very steady in body. They may always chant their rounds and strictly follow the four regular principles and worship the deity and read the sutra and do everything in body, but they don't. There's speech, they may talk nonsense. And they may not have all good qualities, but they're steady in body. Or they may be steady in mind and still not be steady in body, which is an interesting concept. Or they may be steady in speech. We've seen this. We've seen devotees who, you know, they're always talking about Krishna and their speaking is really pukka, but then their activities are not so first class. This was said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that you both, your prachar and achar are both good. Your preaching and your behavior are good. So we have to see some people, this isn't Chaitanya Charitamrita, their behavior is good, but their speaking is not good. Other people, their speaking is good, their behavior is not good. You remember that? So, and this is our practical experience, isn't it? With ourselves and with other people. So each of us here, we probably have some aspects of devotional service that we're really steady in and really fixed in and we don't struggle with at all. And then we might have some other aspects of Krishna consciousness that are sort of medium and other aspects that are really difficult. Is this our experience? Yes? And we see this with other people. We see some people and we'll see they're so first class in something. And other things they're not so first class in. We may think, well, if they're first class in one thing, then they must be a pure devotee. Or we think if they're having trouble with one thing, they must be a fallen rascal. But people aren't like that. It's just not the reality. So you can't put but when we're talking about a stage, we're talking about overall. Just like if you want to talk about how mature somebody is, you look at overall maturity. But it's not that simple. You can have a very mature person who is sometimes very immature. Yes?
You're making the point like we have all three qualities. We are on like, some qualities of Kanishtha, some qualities of Madhyama.
That can be.
And it's not defined.
Well, you could have somebody, let's say you have somebody who they don't criticize others and they're always doing devotional service, but they may still have a propensity for criticism and they may still distinguish between innocent and so they're becoming an uttam. There's also, you know, the beginner, the middle beginner, the top beginner, the beginning middle, the top. And then again, you can't take a person and just say, okay, you're in this category in everything all the time. That's not usually the case. You know, we get to a point that we're uttama all the time, but... And the main thing I wanted to do this for is to point out that the kanista of one description is not the kanista of the other description. You can't equate them. You can't say, well, the person who's chanting Hare Krishna, they haven't received diksha, they must have weak faith and weak knowledge. Maybe not. Maybe they haven't taken diksha yet, but maybe they have very firm faith and very firm knowledge. Maybe in terms of uttama adhikari for bhakti, they're an uttama. But when it comes to Rupa Goswami's other definition, they haven't even taken diksha yet. Is that possible?
Yeah.
Of course it is. And maybe they still don't see everybody as a devotee except for themselves. So they're not all the same. They're not all, although they're using the same words, they're not all talking about the same thing. They're not all describing the same thing. I would compare it to, if you look at again, just a material example, a person grows up and they become physically mature, they become intellectually mature, socially mature, right? And those don't all happen at the same time. So a person might be very intellectually mature but physically immature. Or they might be physically mature and they might be emotionally immature. So you're looking at different areas. And because it's not relevant here, I don't want to get into it too much, but this idea that the one we use the most often is the one from the 11th canto. So generally when we're talking about Kanista, Majjhima, and Uttama, we're talking about the 11th canto description. We don't usually talk about the Nectar of Instruction, text 5. That's not usually what we're in terms of association, in terms of practical action. We're not usually using that one, and we're not usually using the one we discussed today either. We're usually using the one from the 11th canto. According to the one we discussed today, Chandrasekhar Acharya was considered a Kanista Adhikari in Chaitanya Charitamrita because he couldn't argue with the Mayavadi sannyasis. because his scriptural knowledge was very low. So although he was actually a pure devotee, he was considered a kanista in that sense, in the sense of scriptural knowledge. Just one note I want to make about the 11th canto demarcations is that you can use those demarcations for people also from other sampradayas and even religious people in general. Because in general, we see people who believe God is only in my temple. God is only in my religion, and they don't know how to treat other living entities. So a lot of the religious people in the world are kanista adhikaris according to the 11th canto. They go to their church or their mosque or whatever, their temple, and they're worshiping God, and then they kill animals and eat animals. They don't know how to treat other living entities. Or they have wars with other people of other religions. So that's a very low level of kanista adhikari according to that definition. And that definition of kanista majjhima and uttama is very useful for understanding the relationship of various religious systems to each other and the situation of religious practitioners. All right. From the end, you have those who have a book, you can see that there's, we talk about from page 33. Srila Prabhupada's talking about this bhukti and mukti, that they're like being haunted by ghosts and witches. Now, it's a subtle but important distinction. We are not saying that mukti is a witch. We're saying the desire for mukti is like being haunted by a witch. Mukti Devi is a great devotee. We're not accusing Mukti Devi or even Maya Devi of being a ghost or a witch. That would be very disrespectful. But we're saying that if you have a desire for bhakti and mukti, you become like a crazy person. You talk nonsense. You're not able really to function on a spiritually sane platform. All right, then from the middle of 33 all the way through the end of chapter 4, there's example and example and evidence one after another about that pure devotional service must be free from the desire for liberation. And again, as I said before lunch, this is because anybody can understand, if they think about it for a moment, that it couldn't be pure devotion if you want something material. That's pretty obvious. If I say, I want to be your friend because I know you're rich and I'm hoping you'll give me some money, you'll say, well, then you're not really a friend. It's pretty obvious. So if I'm going to Krishna just for the idea, you know, give me money, give me this, give me this, give me this, give me this. But if I'm going to Krishna saying I want salvation, and we see that most of the religious systems in the world, people are praying for bhakti and mukti. That's what they're praying for. I want to go to heaven or I want salvation, correct? What are the Christians praying for, heaven or salvation? One of the two, or both. That's all. What are most Hindus praying for? Heaven or salvation? Either they want to go to Swarga or they want Mukti. Same with the Buddhists, same with the Muslims, same with the Jews. That's what they're praying for. That's what their religions are all about, Mukti and Mukti. Their religions are all mixed with karma and jnana. Now, generally in this world, the people that we call religious people are people looking for bhakti. And the people we call spiritual people in this world are people looking for mukti. I had a very interesting experience many years ago. I was taking a class on teaching, and one of our teachers worked for a Catholic charity, and the other one was kind of a New Agey philosopher type, and one of them was into bhakti, pious, you know. When we say bhakti, we mean piety, heaven. We don't mean you're a drug dealer and a thief. Pious material life, and the other one wanted salvation. So it's very radical and incredible and reforming and against practically everything in the world to say, hey, we have a system of religion and spirituality that denies bhakti and mukti. Well, what else is there except for bhakti and mukti? Most people don't think there's anything else to go for. And especially mukti. How can you be worshiping God without wanting salvation, without wanting liberation? What do you want? I mean, and this concept of wanting something that's above liberation, this is tough. This is not easy to really not want liberation. Okay, let's go through some of this list. So we have some evidences given, if you have the study guide, right? It lists five evidences. Dova Mangala Thakur, and this is one that Prabhupada quotes a lot. You know, that liberation is just, it's this page here. I'm sorry the pages aren't numbered, but it looks like this. If you have the study guide. And the next page looks like this. They don't have page numbers. They're actually all separate files on the computer. And the next page says Lesson 6. Lesson 6, Chapter 4. So if you have a page that says Lesson 6, Chapter 4, go back two pages. And right at the top of the page it says, see the inquisitive. Do you have that or no? Do you have the other book? Or you don't have this book? Maybe you have this book? So maybe you don't have this one. Sorry. So you have just this for chapter 4? Is that what you have? So I gave you the other book. All right. Then I'll just read from that. It'll be fine. Okay, so, sorry. I have two books here. One you have, one you don't. So in chapter 3, sorry, my mistake. There's five examples. Thank you. Five examples. Dova Mangala Thakur, which is the one that Srila Prabhupada quotes all the time. That liberation is standing Anjali with folded hands. Can I serve you? Can I serve you? Can I serve you? And Uddhava to Krishna. Kapila Dev to Devahuti, which again Prabhupada quotes a lot, that my devotees, even if I offer them the liberation, they don't accept it. Right, we said Uddhava, who says, I don't want any of these. And then Dhruva Maharaj, who says that we cannot approach you through self-realization. Okay, let's go on to chapter 4. So chapter 4, we have Prithu Maharaj. He says, I don't want liberation because I won't be able to hear about you. I want millions of years. What an interesting benediction to ask for. God comes in front of you. What would you like? Can I have a few million years? Millions of tons and millions of years. We have Vaikunthanath Krishna to Durvasa Muni. He says the devotees don't even care for the five kinds of liberation, what to speak of anything else. Krishna to Uddhava again, that the devotees, same as Kapiladeva's point, the devotees don't accept. Lord Shiva to his wife, he says Markandeya Rishi doesn't want anything else other. Prabhupada giving the example of the Dhammadharastika. He tells a little bit of the story of Mother Yasoda binding Krishna, that the devotees pray, I don't want liberation. I just want to be meditating on you. From the Harishirsha Pancharatra, I just want to be your servant. Prahlad, who talks about Hanuman. And the Narada Pancharatra is rejecting everything. Yes?
I would say to you, if we're looking at liberation, I say Krishna consciousness is liberation. So
well, there you go.
But like, it's self-seeming and like...
Oh, now we have two of you here. Two people who have to buy sweets. We're going to have a big sweet party.
I don't liberate from the material world, and that being a Christian. But then not being that, it's being liberated from like stress.
Okay, this is a very good question. So what do we mean by liberation? So there's the five kinds of liberation. What are the five kinds of liberation?
Sayujya.
So the devotees never want Sayujya. They will never accept Sayujya, which is you just merge into Krishna. You don't actually merge into Krishna. We're always individuals, but you feel like you're merged into Krishna. What's another one? Sarshi, which is?
Opulence.
Opulences, having Krishna's How non-envious is Krishna? I don't want to give somebody all of my opulences. Do you want to give anybody all your opulences? No. You might not mind giving some, but you don't want to give all of them. Years ago, one of my students gave me this beautiful cheddar. He was from Nepal. He said, oh, my mata has sent this cheddar from Nepal for you. Beautiful. So I was so proud. Oh, I have a nice cheddar. And I wore it to the temple in the morning, and guess what I saw?
Same cheddar.
Everybody, all the ladies in the temple have the same cheddar. So then I wasn't happy anymore. No. That's called envy. It's called envy. I want something more than you. So Krishna's not envious. He doesn't mind if everyone has the same cheddar. You can all have the same opulences. You can have the opulences of God.
These opulences would be spiritual, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, these are spiritual. This is liberation.
So that's a spiritual theme.
It's a spiritual thing. It's a spiritual thing.
Does that mean that
that's liberation from spiritual?
Does that mean they, when they do get those opulences, that they'll have that prasa eternally, or that?
Ooh, we're going to get to that question very, very soon. So my point is that Krishna is not envious. If you're not envious, Bhaktivinoda Thakura says there's only two rules for the spiritual world: have love and no envy. So if you're loving and not envious, Krishna will give you facility to have opulences equal with him. Okay, next liberation.
Same features.
Same features, Swarupya. You can even look like God. Again, we don't like that. If I'm very beautiful, then I don't want anyone to be as beautiful as I am. Like they have these contests, right, for beauty? They only have one winner. Correct? But Krishna, he's willing to let everybody be as beautiful as he is. When Gopakumar was going to Vaikuntha, he kept thinking he was seeing Vishnu. He kept offering obeisances to the devotees, thinking they were Vishnu. No, I'm not Vishnu. Yes, Uddhava looks like Krishna. Okay, what's another liberation?
Samyutya.
Which is?
Samyutya.
Near
to Krishna.
On the same planet.
Yeah.
And the last one?
Salokya is same planet.
Oh, Salokya is same planet. Samyutya is you're with Krishna all the time.
So Salokya is the same planet. We have these liberations. It's like Vaikuntha planet, is it?
Yes, this is Vaikuntha.
So you're a devotee, so like you're a big demon, and you have these things of liberation. So.
There's no demons in Vaikuntha.
So why is it like so frowned upon if there's devotees in Vaikuntha with Krishna?
It's not frowned upon.
Okay.
But it's not the topmost thing.
Okay.
Exactly. There are pure devotees in Vaikuntha. But...
Are they like servants only? They're not any other rasas.
Mm-hmm. That's right. But they're also attracted by Krishna's opulences. They're not envious. They don't envy Krishna's opulences. Their mood is serving Krishna. And they certainly love Krishna. And they're pure. They don't have any material desires. But their mood for Krishna is that they still want to share his opulences, not out of envy.
So is it available to people still now? Is any like the...
Excuse me?
Is it still available to like the... We're trying to get rid of all that stuff, right?
Is that still available?
Like,
well, sure, it's available. So, you can go to Vaikuntha and get any of the liberation, sure. It's not that once you join the Hare Krishna movement, you're not allowed to go to Vaikuntha. You have to go to Goloka Vrindavan.
So I like beautiful things. I'm not saying that's all that I want.
As soon as you walk in that door of an ISKCON temple, you know, if you want to go to Vaikuntha, it's all over.
I'm not saying I want to. This morning.
You can go to Vaikuntha if you want.
Like,
you could even merge into the Brahman if you wanted to.
You can't. It's just for me, you can't actually do that. Then I'll go somewhere else. You can't actually merge.
Anyway, you can go into... No one's going to... Who's going to stop you? If you want to merge into the Brahma Jyoti, Krishna can facilitate that. Of course, now that you've joined Mahaprabhu's movement, Krishna might try to talk you out of it. So if you're still attached to, I want to go to Vaikuntha and have a body like Krishna and opulences like Krishna, now that you're under Mahaprabhu's shelter, you know, Mahaprabhu might try to show you something a little better. But if you insist that's what you want, ekavahanam yovidadatikama, Krishna can certainly give that. And that's fine. You know, we devotees of Krishna, we're not saying that everybody has to attain exactly the same perfection. We don't say that. We don't say everybody has to become a Krishna Bhakta in Vrindavan, or everybody has to be a gopi, or even everybody has to be a Manjari gopi. Some people say things like that. But that's not the Vedic idea of religion. The Vedic idea of religion is it's very individual. We're saying this is the best. This is the best. Go for that. But if someone says, I don't want to go for that, I want to go for something else, okay, then go for something else. So therefore you find Prabhupada's purpose where he'll say you can worship any Vishnu Tattva. We will get there. All right, also in this chapter, although it's not the title of the chapter, is the idea of rejecting material opulences. So Bharat Maharaj is given as an example of somebody who gave up material opulences. Vritrasura, who said, I don't want to go to the highest planet or mystic perfections. Lord Shiva, who told Sati that in relationship to Chitraketu, devotees don't care if they're in heaven or in hell. Indra to Diti, that devotees know what their real self-interest is. Prahlad Maharaj, who said that devotional service includes everything. The devotees don't have a separate desire. Indra, who gave this example, it's a nice example, that if you just have Krishna as a supreme enjoyer, you'll enjoy automatically. You don't need to enjoy separately. And the Nagapatnis, who said that if you get the dust of Krishna's lotus feet, normally foot dust is not very interesting. If you went to anybody in the world and you say, what would you rather have, $1 billion or somebody's foot dust? No, the Nagapatnis say, if we can get Krishna's foot dust, then we don't care about anything else.
I don't understand to gain personal association, what is so wrong with that? Because if you're in the higher ask, of course you want to be with Krishna.
Oh, very good question.
That one has to be
there. Very good question. So why are the devotees not even interested in Krishna's personal... Of course they want Krishna's personal association. However, they're more interested in...
Service.
They're more interested in service. I think it was Ridananda Maharaj who was following Srila Prabhupada around for some time, and then Prabhupada said, you're not supposed to enjoy the spiritual master, you're supposed to serve the spiritual master. And Lord Ramachandra, who sent out his brothers out of Ayodhya, Prabhupada said that Krishna doesn't want just his servitors to be associating with him for their own sense gratification, he wants them to do service. So of course the devotees want to be with Krishna. The gopis don't want Krishna out of their vision even for the blink of an eyelid. They don't want to be away from Krishna even for a tiny, tiny fraction of a second. But for Krishna's service, they would rather be away from Krishna and serving Krishna than with Krishna and not serving Krishna, if that's the choice. If I can be with Krishna forever but not do any service for him, then I would rather never see Krishna but do service for him.
That's
of course what?
That'd be impossible. That's not really a realistic thing.
Are you worried that if you become a pure devotee you'll never see Krishna? You scared that if I decide, Krishna, I'm going to just serve you and I don't even care about seeing you, that you'll never see him? You don't worry, you'll see him. But that's the mood of the devotee. The mood of the devotee is, I just want love and I just want service.
Isn't love like the interaction though? To love means we actually will have an interaction from both sides. So
yes, but interaction does not depend on being in the same planet or in the same room. First of all, Krishna is always there. You can't be separate from Krishna. That's not possible. That's not possible even for a materialist. But there's the illusion of, there may be an illusion of separateness in terms of Vipralamba Bhav, in terms of that increasing of love. And yes, there's a constant reciprocation going on between the devotee and Krishna. And it's said that when the devotee feels separation from Krishna, they appear to see millions and millions and millions of Krishnas, where when they're with Krishna, they just see one Krishna. But the point is that the devotees are not interested in enjoying, the pure devotees that we're talking about here, are not interested in enjoying the liberation separate from service. They're only interested in having these things as part of their service. They're interested in Krishna's happiness. And that service is so great, it gives them so much happiness, that they don't really care about anything else. They really don't care, because they feel connected to Krishna by that service. So whether they're on the same planet as Krishna or not. Just like Srila Prabhupada was serving here, and at least ostensibly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna are no longer on this planet. And Srila Prabhupada's not saying, well, I'm only going to be on the planet when Mahaprabhu's there. I can't be on the planet without Mahaprabhu. Like that. You know, the devotee says, I'm willing to go to a planet where Krishna's not there. Of course, Krishna's here. But you understand what I mean? I'm willing to go to a planet where Krishna's not there in service.
Yeah, then Prabhupada said, I'm willing to go to hell.
Yes, anywhere. Because if someone's serving Krishna, there's no hell. There's no separation from Krishna. Krishna's there. They're aware of Krishna. I was right there when Prabhupada was asked, you know, have you ever seen Krishna? He says, I'm seeing it every moment. But yet, from another point of view, he's here on the planet. Krishna's not here. Let's say that Srila Prabhupada is part of Krishna's intimate entourage, but yet here he is without Krishna. So, like that. So, what kind of happiness must, this is the point, what kind of happiness must this devotional service be if nothing else is important? If once you have this, everything else is included. This is the point. Everything else is included. All the kinds of liberation are included. You feel that you have opulence equal to Krishna. You feel that you're in Krishna's presence. Everything is included. All, whatever kind of happiness you could want, whatever kind, it's all already there. You don't need it separately. You don't want it separately. And I really like what Gajendra says. Gajendra says, for myself, I want so many things, but I have heard that the great devotees who are experiencing devotional service, they don't want anything else. So if we're at the point where we're not experiencing how incredibly satisfying Krishna's service is, at least we can understand there's some kind of happiness of loving service that is so great that it includes everything else, and you don't need anything else separately. You don't need to look for something else outside of that. And whether you have anything else separately is irrelevant. It just doesn't matter. And Prabhupada will give the example, if you have $1,000 all your $10 problems are solved. You're full. You're satisfied. You don't need anything else because you're full, because you're satisfied. All right, and the question was asked about Vaikuntha. A number of you asked this. I think you asked this also. So Srila Prabhupada says here, the other four liberations, although not desired by devotees, are still not against the devotional ideas. And we say again, not desired by the devotees, it's not desired separately from their service. They don't want anything separate from their service. But they're not against the devotional ideals. In other words, it can be part of your devotion to be on Krishna's planet and even have opulences like Krishna, etc. Some of the liberated persons who have achieved these four stages of liberation may also develop affection for Krishna and be promoted to the Goloka Vrindavan planet in the spiritual sky. In other words, those who are already promoted to the Vaikuntha planets and who possess the four kinds of liberation may also sometimes develop affection for Krishna and become promoted to Krishna Loka. So those who are in the four liberated states may still be going through different stages of existence. In the beginning, they may want the opulences of Krishna, but at the mature stage, the dormant love for Krishna exhibited in Vrindavan becomes prominent in their hearts. So this also relates to the idea of fixed rasa. In other words, a person may be a devotee and may be desiring these liberations and go to Vaikuntha and gradually realize their intrinsic rasa in Goloka Vrindavan. This was the statement I was referring to that Srila Prabhupada makes that's not in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu to answer your question about Prabhupada's statements. So this is a very extraordinary statement. In the first canto, in the ninth chapter in regard to Bhijma, Srila Prabhupada talks about how everyone attained their original forms after death, and he says they went either to Vaikuntha or to Goloka according to their intrinsic rasa. But here he's saying you could go to Vaikuntha and still be moving on to Goloka. Alright, I'm going to take a break and then we're going to finish with some questions and discussion. So, 10 minutes.